Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
Hi, this is Kelly Campbell. Welcome back to the Legal Nurse Podcast. Today, we have Brenda Egan Johnson. Dr. Brenda Egan Johnson has over 20 years' experience in pediatric brain injury. She is the state program coordinator for Pennsylvania's nationally recognized Brain Steps Brain Injury School Consulting Program. She holds a doctorate in mind, brain, and teaching from Johns Hopkins and is a legal, forensic, and educational consultant. Dr. Egan Johnson is a certified brain injury specialist, an adjunct instructor at George Washington University, holds 3 Pennsylvania teaching certifications, and is published. She served as an expert external reviewer for the CDC Pediatric TBI Reports to Congress, co-authored a CDC document on concussion strategies, and has trained over 2,500 school-based concussion management teams in Pennsylvania. And I'm proud to say she's my new friend and lives 25 minutes away. Welcome, doctor.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. I'm very excited to be here. I love talking about pediatric brain injury and spreading awareness. So thank you for having me.
Oh, well, thank you for dedicating some time to this much needed topic. You know, it's a personal interest of mine, having 6 young nephews that just make me nervous. Yeah. Quite honestly. So where to get started? I'm not even sure. You know, I already have you reserved a couple of times. Come back.
Yes.
This topic is so very, very important. But your resume is so impressive. I think that's why we need to have you back a few times, just because this topic is so broad. But concussion awareness is finally making its mark. So what symptoms, why do you think recently there has been a surge in society with the awareness?
You know, it's very interesting because concussion has been around. I mean, we all have heard of someone, we all know somebody that's had a concussion. And within the past 10 years, the awareness has surged in society because of 2 things. One, the research that's now being done. And we'll talk about that in a minute. So research is being done, and because of the research that's being done, states, every state in the United States now has a return to sports or return to play concussion law for their students. Typically, it's middle high school student age. And the states pass these laws rampantly because the research began to show that after a student sustained or anyone sustains a concussion, the brain is more vulnerable for a period of time during recovery to sustaining a second concussion that takes less force to do more damage when the brain is in this state of recovery. It can cause severe disability if you are not fully recovered and you return to sports. And in some rare cases, they believe that it has even caused death in some young adults, adolescents. So the states pass these laws, which raised awareness, because now when a student hits their head in an athletic event, they need to be pulled out of the game. And according to the law, someone has to, who is trained in concussion, typically it's a medical provider of some sort, they then have to determine if that student A, had a concussion, and B, when they can return to play. But it has to be managed. So along with that, the National Football League and National Hockey League, it's been in the media a lot about chronic traumatic encephalopathy. So the awareness has been raised not only in schools and in general society, but also with parents. Now, I don't deal with return to play or return to sports. I focus on a student's school and what they do when they return to school. Because when they return to school, according to the Centers for Disease Control, concussion symptoms fall within four categories. And those four categories are thinking and remembering, physical, emotional mood, and sleep disturbance. Usually after a concussion, commonly students have headaches. I also frequently see that they have balance problems, dizziness, feeling tired, sensitivity to light and noise is a big one, and many individuals do not know that that's even a symptom of a concussion. So it's really important that especially parents and anyone out there who is talking to someone who's had a concussion, talk to them about the symptoms, because often they think of just memory loss and headaches, maybe loss of consciousness and vomiting as the main symptoms, but there are really so many more, like difficulty thinking, slowed processing speed, difficulty remembering new information, trouble falling asleep, trouble staying asleep. And these are all very important concussion symptoms. So it's important to manage the concussions over time.
Right. As a clinical legal nurse consultant, you know, it makes me think of a call I received from an attorney. And the call I received, you know, the attorney said, screening for merit. And he proceeded to tell me over the phone about a young player that had a concussion, and he was pulled out of the game and then returned to play after being cleared by the emergency doctor. But the parents noticed a change in behavior, started acting out in school, acting out at home, and eventually he committed suicide. And they wanted to blame it on the concussion. And I'm like, oh, you know, I don't know, you know. There's lots of things. Was there a history of new onset? Well, as you mentioned, headaches, is it a documented history? Mm-hmm. So as we go on, you know, there's just so many things out there to follow the symptoms of concussion.
Yes.
Teenage depression and that sort of thing is a whole other section, but you have to be aware of what concussion symptoms are. So
I'm glad you brought that up, because it's important to know that there, as research comes out, it's sometimes hard for medical providers to keep up with all of the latest research on all of the different medical diagnoses. So when a student goes to an emergency room, they should never be cleared. I'm not a medical provider. However, I know from working in the field that the consensus is that a medical provider should never clear a student in the emergency room if that student hit their head, because they need to manage the symptoms over time that could show up within 24, maybe 48 hours. So sometimes we don't see the symptoms immediately. It may take a little bit of time, a couple hours or so, to manifest. So that's why it's important. And also, the mental health piece is very important now. We are seeing a lot of children, adolescents, who have had concussions, especially multiple concussions. And over time, whether it's organically caused by the hit to the head, or from the symptoms that maybe are prolonged, students are experiencing anxiety, depression, suicidal ideation, panic. So, and we don't know, was this underlying? Was this going to occur anyway? Because mental health issues tend to surface, you know, hormones, middle school years, teenagers. It's really hard to siphon it out. And everyone always wants to siphon it out. They want to know, what does the concussion cause? What does this cause? And I really try to refocus the conversation into, if this, it really doesn't matter what the cause was. Let's figure out how to support this student.
Right. Right. Okay. So we've discussed the most common concussion symptoms. Mm-hmm. What are concussion modifiers?
The concussion modifiers are really important, I believe, because anytime I'm presented with a child's case to look at and they've had a concussion, I want to know what is in this child's history that could modify their outcome or modify their recovery time. The majority of students, of children and adolescents, or anybody really, the majority of individuals are thought to recover within about 28 days. So about a month. 70% should recover.
Okay.
Typically, kids recover within 2 weeks, fairly fast. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the acute phase. So I always want to know, what is in the history? Does the student have a history of migraines, family history of migraines, history of learning disabilities, history of emotional, mental health issues, history of sleep issues? There's even a study where one hospital was looking at a history of having a lazy eye could impact potentially recovery. Oh. And if I see that a student has had a history of multiple concussions, or history of learning disabilities, immediately in my head, that's a little red flag, where I think, okay, so I need to prepare this child, an adolescent, and family, whoever it may be, that this student may not recover in a typical 4 week period. It may take a little longer because we have to set them up for success. Because if they think they're going to recover within a week or 2 weeks like their friend, and then it lingers for 2 months because they have, you know, this history of modifiers in their life, that can set them up for some mental health issues like depression and anxiety. So it's really important that we even convey to this young adult population, we expect you to get better. We don't expect this to last long, because so many students are hearing about the NFL players who then have chronic traumatic encephalopathy, and they're frightened, and their parents are frightened. So we need to bring down their worries about this.
Or Aunt Kel's worries.
Yes, and your worries. Yes.
This is Pat Iyer. Before we continue with the show, I'll share with you a resource you'll find helpful in evaluating head injury cases. I'm describing our 6-hour-long course called Falls Course, The Impact of Head Injury. I invited nursing experts to participate with me in this course so you could get the tools you need to analyze a head trauma case. What can this course do for you? You'll gain insight and practical tools about how to analyze a head trauma case. You'll gain skill in reviewing the facts of a fall case, and learn from expert witnesses who have reviewed hundreds of cases. You'll learn skills and techniques that you can use immediately. This course is not full of dry theory. It's a fast-paced, comprehensive way to learn practical, useful information. And you can review the course over and over. Not only will you be filled with useful information at the end of each session, when you purchase the course, you'll be able to rewatch the replay and review the transcripts. This course is available on our new mobile app, biz.edu. You'll be able to access the videos, slides, transcripts, and bonuses right from your smartphone. Our app is ready now for iPhones and Android users. And you can also watch it on your desktop computer. Purchase the course at the show notes on podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. Or if you're listening to this podcast on your phone, check out the show notes for a button to click for more information. Use the code LISTENED in the coupon box to get a 25% discount when you check out. You can get the biz.edu app at legalnursebusiness.com/bizedu. And that's spelled B-I-Z-E-D-U.
So when you say, you know, the typical recovery time could be 2 weeks to a month.
Right.
What exactly is cognitive rest?
That is a very good question. And the researchers are still trying to siphon that out exactly. But what we know is after a concussion, what happens to the brain is there's a chemical cascade that occurs to the neurons in our brain. And what happens is the potassium enters the cell while the calcium, or the potassium exits the cell while the calcium enters the cell. And during this period, it leads to a metabolic mismatch or a neurometabolic mismatch. So during this time period, the student will be experiencing symptoms. And we look at the period initially as the acute phase of recovery. And typically in the educational field, we consider the acute phase about 4 weeks, maybe 4 to 6 weeks. Beyond that, we consider that the protracted or prolonged or rehab phase. So cognitive exertion that occurs early on needs to be supported in school. And cognitive exertion is thinking. So when a student goes to school after a concussion, they should be home for just a few days.
Mm-hmm.
The research is saying 1 to 2 days is probably pretty good.
Okay.
Then they need to go back to school. But the school also needs to be supporting that student's return by providing academic adjustments, which are informal supports for students during that 4 to 6 week period, so that the student can remain in school learning while they are recovering from their concussion. So by providing informal adjustments, such as no tests during that first few weeks, longer time to complete their work, half of the workload instead of completing all the math problems, just demonstrate to the teacher that you could do the key learning concept for the day and then move on to the next concept, because it's a very delicate balance when a student's in school. We want to keep them in school learning without spiking their symptoms, because a lot of times their symptoms will spike from cognitive overexertion, from thinking too hard. And while their brain's trying to recover, they will maybe get a migraine, end up in the nurse's office, and then have to go home. So we really want to keep them in school.
Okay. So it's similar as return to play, and it's called return to learn. Is that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So return to learn.
Yes.
Now, is that your phrase or
no.
Is that a clinical phrase?
That phrase was started by Dr. Karen McAvoy, who's runs a concussion clinic in Colorado. She's a close friend of mine. She started that term years ago because it pairs well with return to play.
Right.
Now the entire field uses return to learn.
Okay.
And return to learn is that phase when the student comes back to school. We are supporting the return to learn because return to learn needs to occur. The student needs to be back at school full time with no academic supports due to concussion symptoms before they should return to contact sports.
Okay.
So it's step one.
Okay. So what would be some key red flags for us as legal nurse consultants when reviewing concussion cases? What would you
suggest? I would suggest, first of all, you really want to look at those symptoms. So look at the Centers for Disease Control chart, which lists the most common symptoms. That's the most common symptom chart to look at. Look at, was the student experiencing these symptoms beforehand on a regular basis? Some might have headaches all the time. It may not be concussion related. Also, you want to look through the records very carefully. Once I was working on a case and I found buried in the school health record that the attorney hadn't received, it said that the student had fallen off of the sliding board and sustained a concussion, but that was in no other records. So it's important to find these records through the school, because again, you know, that could impact the concussion recovery of this student.
Right.
Also, how's the student reading? So when you ask a student, you know, show me how you read, a student may read for you and say that the lines seem all squiggly or that they may have to track with their finger. That's not normal to track with your finger. You should be able to read without doing that. But if I see a student doing that, I ask them, were you tracking with your finger on the lines before your concussion? Often they say no. Well, to me, that shows that there could be some ocular issues with vision processing going on. So I also ask questions about their balance. So how is your balance? Can you look up and not get dizzy? Can you go up and down stairs without holding a railing? If the student says that they get dizzy often, that indicates that they should probably be evaluated by a vestibular therapist, who is typically like a physical therapist who has extra training in, you know, vestibular therapy.
Right.
Or an ocular, you know, they should go in for an ocular evaluation with a neuro-ophthalmologist who is familiar with concussions and the effects of concussions, because vestibular and ocular issues are entwined almost. They're very, very similar. So a student could be off balance because they have convergence issues with their eyes. These are so common, and so many parents don't even know because it's not talked about a lot. But we know that if a student has a history of prior concussions, chances are they're going to have vestibular issues. There was a study done out of Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. If I recall, it said almost 90% of the records that they reviewed, I think it was about 90%, these students with prior concussions also had vestibular issues. So it's important to look at these as red flags. And also another red flag is when I'm talking with a teacher, I frequently will hear after any severity of brain injury, oh, the student's so spacey now, he's daydreaming all the time. Well, to me, that means, uh-oh, is there something going on? Has this student been evaluated by a neurologist? Because could there be some seizure activity occurring? And even with concussions, we have seen it. Less frequently with concussions, but it does occur.
Okay. Wow. You've given us lots to think about.
Good.
A lot. A lot. So how do we get in touch with you when we need some more tips?
Well, you can reach me. So I have a forensic and educational consulting work that I do. I have a website. It's www.BrendaEagan.com. You can reach me there, and it has all of my contact information, but I am also a brain injury educational specialist, so I work on forensic cases to help bring in and look at the functional aspect of a child's acquired brain injury, including concussion.
Okay. Well, great. Well, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. And listeners, don't worry. We already have her scheduled to come back and give us a little bit more information. So tune in next week for another great podcast. Bye-bye.
The Falls Course, The Impact of Head Trauma, is ready for you on your desktop or mobile computer. Be sure to see the Learn More button in the show notes of this podcast. You'll find the show notes on podcast.legalnursebusiness.com or on our new mobile app, biz.edu. Get the app at legalnursebusiness.com/bizedu. That's BIZEDU. legalnursebusiness.com/bizedu. And I've got a phenomenal resource for you just waiting on legalnursebusiness.com. My online training and books are designed to help LNCs discover ways to strengthen their skills and their businesses. Check them out at legalnursebusiness.com. Many of us are lifelong learners who enjoy the chance to keep expanding our knowledge, just like the Book of the Month clubs, my membership site, LNCEU, LegalNurseLegalNurseLegalNurse.com gives you 2 online trainings every month. We have a yearly payment plan that saves you over $50 compared to paying monthly, and each program is hugely discounted. Look at the options at LNCU.com. And my last website, the LNCAcademy.com, is the coaching program I offer to a select number of LNCs. You get my personal attention and mentorship so that you can excel and build a strong foundation for your LNC practice. Get all the details at LNCAcademy.com.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on LegalNurseBusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at LNCAcademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on LegalNursePodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on LegalNursePodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.